Welcome to the British Continental Podcast, the show shining a light on stories about British bike racing teams and riders at the domestic level.
Hello and welcome to the British Continental Podcast. I'm Denny Gray, and in today's episode, we review what was a truly fascinating Stage 3 of the Tour of Britain, with the help of St Piran team manager Steve Lampier, new race leader Ben Perry, Ribble Worldtype Pro Cycling sports director Colin Sturgis, and Team DSM's young gun Oscar Onley. On paper at least, this stage was one for the sprinters. The stage route featured a lumpy start, including the first category Chapel Fell, which then gave way to slightly less fierce rolling terrain on relatively wide roads. However, the stage was anything but formulaic, as we've often come to expect at the Tour of Britain. In contrast to stages 1 and 2, there was a fierce battle to get into the day's break. And when it did eventually form, it was a strong quartet that got away. The domestic duo of St Piran's Alex Richardson and With Sun God's Ben Perry were joined by Belgian pairing of Camille Bonneau of Sport Vlaanderen and Baloise and Matthijs Parsons of Bingol Pals Source WB. With the break still young, some lively and very visible discussions ensued between the leading quartet, the four riders debating how they would work together for the remainder of the stage. More on this later from our audio diarist Steve Lampier and Ben Perry. Perry and Parsons mopped up most of the bonus seconds on offer at the intermediate sprints, important given their GC proximity, only 14 seconds behind race leader Corbin Strong, while Bonneau took maximum points atop each of the KOM climbs. None of the escapees picked up enough points, however, to trouble the incumbent competition leaders, meaning With Sun God's Matt Teggart and Jake Scott retained their respective leads in the sportsbreaks.com sprints and Skoda King of the Mountains competitions. As torrential rain hit the race in the closing 50 kilometres, it became apparent that the leading four had a fighting chance of making it to the end. With 30 kilometres left, the gap was 3.5 minutes, and despite the best efforts of the peloton and the gap slowly dwindling, the advantage continued to stay with the break. For much of the final kilometres, Richardson declined to cooperate with his fellow escapees, for reasons Steve Lampier explains in his dispatch, but even this didn't overly hinder the break's position. In the closing stages, Richardson tried multiple attacks, but all were quickly closed down. The break then slowed considerably as they rolled into Sunderland, so much so that it looked like they might be caught. But Bonneau then put in a strong attack just a few hundred metres out, which his rivals were too slow to react to. It enabled Bonneau to surge to the biggest victory of his professional career, with a visibly disappointed Perry in second. Richardson rolled in third, with Parsons fourth. The speeding peloton arrived at the line just seconds later. Initially, the commissaires awarded the race lead to overnight leader Corbin Strong of Israel Premier Tech, with Perry in second on the same time. But after reviewing the race footage, the jury decided that Perry finished 7 seconds ahead of the peloton, which, together with the time bonuses he earned on the road, means he is now the new race leader. As far as we can work out, it's the first time a domestic team has ever held the race lead of the modern-day Tour of Britain. With Sun God will certainly have their work cut out defending Perry's lead, as Stage 4 looks brutal. Running from Redcar to Duncan Park, it's a short stage at 149.5 kilometres, but it features some punishing climbs, and the final 30 kilometres in particular are unforgiving, and include the climbs of Carlton Bank, which is 2 kilometres long and has an average gradient of 9.8%, and Newgate Bank, which is also 2 kilometres long, with a 6% average gradient. Another exciting day's racing awaits. So that's the stage wrap, so let's get over to our diarists. First up today is St Piran manager Steve Lampier. He explains the team's tactics and the political intrigue that shaped the break's approach to the stage. Fascinating stuff.
Tour Britain, Stage 3. What a day. Now, where do we begin with this? So much to unravel. But, you know, first of all, third place on the stage, yeah. We are, you know, with all things considered, which we'll get into in a moment, yeah, I'm really happy. Kind of happy for Richie, but gutted at the same time because we, you know, we had a plan and we know that he's got the legs and, you know, can go for the victory. It just needs to be done in a particular way. But I mean, you know, 12 months ago, would we have been over the moon with third place? So we can't be bemoaning a third place at the moment. But just the situation of how that occurred, you know, it's just, you know, with the racing, the way it was, yeah, a little bit unique. You know, I'm pretty sure everyone's seen it on the TV, how it was all unravelling. So, because we knew, the break would take a lot longer to go than previous days because we was on bigger, wider roads. So therefore it was going to be strong guys there. It wasn't going to be a standard six Conti teams, bang, you know, shut the road job. It was going to be, you know, lots of firing away, firing, jumping, resetting of the race. So the break took a considerable time to form. And once it had, it, you know, it's going to be strong guys because, you know, they're the only guys with petrol left. But obviously we had two guys up there on GC, you know, the Bingo guy and Ben Perry at 14 seconds. So it would have been hard for them to, you know, for the, in normal circumstances, for the break to allow them, you know, a huge amount of leash. So a little bit of an agreement was done whereby the Bingo guy and Ben would sit up after the last hotspot time bonus sprint. And then after that, you know, Richie and the Vlaanderen guy can race for the victory. But the Bingo guy went back on his word and, you know, he didn't, you know, he didn't sit up. Therefore, Ben was going to sit up. You know, the group, the gap had gone out to 5 minutes because, you know, they were riding hard into the crosswind, you know, with the agreement that they would sit up. And, the proverbial hit the fan. You know, Israel started to ride harder and harder and harder, you know, putting all their troops to the front. And then Ineos took over, and, you know, Andre Amador took, like, you know, 2 minutes out in 10K. Like, he was absolutely shifting. The break didn't get caught, but, you know, it was super close. Well, that meant that, you know, the Vlaanderen guy, he went and won the stage with some clever racing. Richie, you know, had, you know, for the last 30K, he was like, nah, he was sitting on, you know, he wasn't gonna ride with, you know, with the gap, with that time gap, with guys that, you know, almost gone back on their word. You know, that's, you know, he's a loyal guy. He's, you know, if he in his mind, if an agreement has been made, then, you know, you stand by that. So, you know, he was sat on to, you know, to do the right thing, and then the other guys rode. And then unfortunately Richie, he still wanted to race for the victory, you know, so towards the end he was attacking, but you know, it's hard for him to attack in that situation. You know, he needs, you know, to go with speed and, you know, with lesser riders there, when you've got three guys who can just chase him down each and every time, you know, he's never going to give up, but, you know, he's up against it. And, you know, the Vlaanderen guy won with some clever racing. Ben Perry was second, so he picked up some bonus seconds, and now he's in the leader's jersey, which, yeah, it's going to make for a very interesting day tomorrow. It's a hard day. It's the last real GC day. The organisers are calling it the Queen Stage almost. So it's going to be an interesting race. I envisage anarchy all day long. You know, once we get out of Robin Hood's Bay, it's super narrow roads. We've ridden those in the Tour of Yorkshire. It's super narrow, up and down. You can't chase. So if there's groups away with World Tour guys, yeah, it's going to be mayhem. I see, yeah, with having a difficult job tomorrow, which, you know, they would anyway if they were in the lead, but I think, you know, more so the way that it's played out, it's not necessarily Ben's fault or Wiv's fault. They played the game, and, you know, it's the dumb thing, you know, and he was, you know, Ben was happy to sit up and, you know, go back, you know, from what I gathered, and then but the Bingo guy wasn't. So it's going to be an interesting day. I mean, I want to see how that envisages, and hopefully we will have another front seat cinema showing of that. So, good day. I mean, the rest of the lads pulled up well. They just, you know, started sitting up, coming to the finish to save petrol, not take any risks. Harry was going to have a go at the sprint, but yeah, he just said, it's, I'm not going to risk it, you know, in those monsoon conditions. They were a bit difficult at the end, but yeah, perfect, you know, kind of day for us really. Tomorrow is a fantastic day. We've got, you know, it's a big climbing stage, and, you know, hard, grippy Yorkshire roads. First time the Tour of Britain's been into Yorkshire in modern history, I believe. So, you know, we always know that Yorkshire puts on a show for bike racing, so it's going to be a great day, but we'll see how that unfolds. Matt, check in with you tomorrow. Cheers, bye.
Thanks, Steve. If it was a great day for St Piran, it was a superlative day for Wiv Sungod. As you know, in each episode, we task Hunt's Ollie Gray with interviewing someone from the WIF Suncor camp, so unsurprisingly, we asked him to sit down with new race leader Ben Perry. Ben gives us a beautifully detailed account of his day, including some subtly different conclusions about the deals that were or were not made between the break.
Ben, very eventful stage to talk through.
Yeah.
First off, break itself was really late in forming. Obviously, we saw it was pretty hard for a break to establish itself and quite a lot of mess. Like, could you just talk us through that, how it went away?
Yeah, there's a few like moves before the one I was in. Like, there's one I was in that we thought was gone, then it came back, and then there was a few more people trying. Like, obviously, we were in everything. And then went up a pretty hard climb pretty early on, and people were still trying there on the climb. And I was feeling like it was hard, but it was the kind of feeling where I'm like, okay, I've everyone in the group, I'm feeling good on the climb. So in this mix now, there's that many less guys who can go for the break, because there's other guys who were thinking they'll go on the break, like other guys on conscious teams mostly, who were just probably on the limit. So of the 50 guys who are thinking of going on the break, there's now 10 who are maybe capable of it. And then the road opened on the right, and I think Richardson had already gone. And then I just went out to him, and then two other guys came, and they shut the road down, and we just ripped it for a few K, and then we started riding super easy.
Mm.
And that was it.
Yeah, there seemed to be a lot of discussion between the four of you early on. Can you tell us what was discussed? Like, what was happening?
Yeah, so the St. Perrin rider was just like, oh, yeah, we have to do this and do that. And he's like giving everyone like instructions, and the rest of us are kind of just like, okay. Oddly enough, the bingo guy was like, oh, I want the sprints. Like, he came over and said, I want the sprints to like the group. And I said, I do too. And my thought was like, okay, like, let's go, like, three duels across the stage. And he's like, okay, well, let's split them. You can have more time than me. And I was like, okay. And then I was like, that's the easiest negotiation I've ever done. Like, great. And then I just, like, who knows? I mean, it worked out better this way because we had more legs, not, like, battling for it. But then I came back to him with, like, okay, like, I'll take the first one. You take the second one. And I'll take the third one. That way it's, like, a bit more fair, because the later the sprint is, the less likely we are to be up front. Like, the first two will for sure get, like, the last two are pretty close together. But yeah, he just was like, sweet, sounds like a deal. So I got 8 seconds, he got 7. And then the original plan was, like, to go for the break for Jake for the KOM. It was, like, suspect one to be in the move. And then, obviously, there's four of us. The team is in the move. You can't win them all. And then Bora made it clear that they didn't want more than one of us from our team being in the break. So they weren't going to let someone jump across, I don't think, once I was in the established move. And then, yeah, the top four guy was like, I want the KOMs. And I was kind of like, well, I can't really...
I'll give you that, mate.
Well, no, I did give it to him. But I was just like, that's something else to race for, where like the original plan really was to go in the break, get some seconds, and sit up knowing there was no chance of the break staying away with that kind of a finish.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all in agreement. We rode really easy for the first probably 70K. And then we came over one climb and turned right. And then from there, we're like, okay, let's rip it. And then San Fran was like, oh yeah, you sit up after the last sprint. And they said to the bingo guy as well. And then I was talking to Anders in our car, and then the bingo guy was talking to his guy. And then I just said, like, and Anders said it to you, like, we can't, depending on what the gap is, one. But mostly, like, if we do all this to get time bonuses, and then we leave the bingo guy in the break, and then the breakaway wins, and he just takes GC away from me that I could have taken. Like, there's no sense in two guys who are the same time, like, giving up the GC position. So I was like, if bingo guy doesn't go back, I don't go back. And then bingo guy's like, I'm not going back. So then St. Perrin sat on the last 50K and like messed with the rhythm a bit, which is, he had his card to play. So when he did that, and then three of us cooperated really well. Like, the bingo guy was actually a beast. Like, he was just like pulling really long, hard turns. He wasn't like exposing himself to anything. He was just riding hard. He didn't care. And I was like playing the game a bit. Sampran rides, like, didn't want to, or Richardson rides, like, I didn't want to let him go. But then in the end, it was, he tried a bunch of times, but he never even broke clear the front of us. Like, just the pace was too high and the level's too high for him, so he couldn't get off the front. And then the three of us together were kind of like, screw this guy. Like, I said to him, feeling like this could have been the last time he's in the position for his whole life. And if we would have got caught, like, I'm sure he's happy now he got a podium and competition or competitive progressive prize. But so it was a result for them in the end too. Like, it paid off in some sense, but it was like, when the gap was coming down fast, it was like, you can contribute here. And it was even to the point where if he would have ridden and said, hey, I'll ride, but you guys don't go for the stage, I would have even taken that if him and it's because the top sport guy sat on a decent amount in the last like 15 to 20K, but not so much so that it like hurt the break. Like, he skipped some turns and stuff, but the three of us cooperated really well.
Yeah. What was the point at which you kind of went from that position of like, oh, you know, we'll get mopped up, you know, this is what always happens. Like, what was the turning point where you were like, this could go?
We had like nearly 2 minutes with 10K to go. Like, I, for the longest time, I mean, there was points where I was like, maybe there's a chance. Like, when we saw we had 5 minutes out of nowhere.
That was about 40-ish, right?
40-ish, yeah. It came down really fast. But like, for a while, I was like, ooh. And then the other thing too is, I think on a normal day with no rain, and a normal day like in another country where the roads aren't so rough and there's so many corners and bollards and things, it was like, you knew it would be hard for the peloton, because you think, okay, from this point before the corner to this point after the corner, the peloton's going our speed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the guy chasing can only corner as fast as we can, or like give or take milliseconds in like this 15-second gap. And then for every 15-second like roundabout and U-turn and thing through a town, it's like they're not making time up there. And they were riding hard, and then a lot of the, like, I don't know how we were going so fast, but like the speed was just so high. And I was like, well, if we're going 50 and I'm spun at my 53.11, like, how much more can they do behind? Like, they have more guys chopping off and like swinging through, boom, boom, boom. But like, they can't really respond to that when the gap is so big. Like, you can, and they obviously took a lot out of us, but we had enough and we had a lot of speed, so.
Mm. And a tailwind for that last 40K as well when you turn north. Obviously, you've kind of touched on it a little bit, but just to go back to Alex Richardson, Sampran. Obviously, he seemed to sit on for, I mean, I think he sat on for at least 20K, maybe 30, without sort of sitting on the front. And then he kind of tried to attack repeatedly, didn't really pay off, but yeah. It did seem like it was maybe disturbing the rhythm of the break. Like, what did you make of that? Was there a conversation amongst you guys about that? Like, it must have obviously been a little frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I expected it, to be honest, and it's just one of these things where it's like, he wasn't in GC, all he cares about is the stage win. He probably knows if he's doing the line, like, the equal share of work with the three of us, he's going to come fourth. So he had to play his card, and from the last sprints to the last 43K, he never touched the win unless he was attacking. So he had an armchair ride for quite a while. And I was, until his first attack, I was like, oh shit, like, he could drop the hammer on us. Like, maybe he's got a lot in store. But then every time he went, like, the three of us were all kind of united in our disliking for him, I guess. So we're all like,
did it feel like 3 versus 1?
Yeah, because as soon as he went, every single time he went, whoever was in the back would just be like, up, 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 up. And then we'd all just start sprinting in unison. And we were going to cooperate. And he never, not many times did he even get past the front of us, because he'd lay off the back and run. And if I wasn't on the front, I'd always be kind of checking. And then also, the roads are so twisty, there's only so many options for him to go. And I don't think he had it to, like, go on a climb, because we're just riding climbs at 400, and he can't hit us with speed on a climb. So it's a bit more just like, okay, well, anytime it's obvious, be ready. And the speed was so high, it just kind of, it didn't really play in his favor how the race was. But I respect that he shot his shot. It was only his only card to play. So
yeah, absolutely. Towards the end, it seemed like touch and go whether the break was going to make it. I know watching on TV, it was like honestly quite stressful. Were you guys aware of just how close it was? Were you thinking about that, or was it, were you just like,
so all that was going through my head was like, don't take any risks, any corners, like, don't, because there was a couple times I felt a little slide. just because it's that wet and that much cornering. And I was just thinking, keep it upright. And then the, like, also probably the reason why I didn't win or I didn't have a better shot at the line is all I was thinking about was, okay, because for at 5K to go, I think they gave us 40 seconds. So I was thinking, there's no way they're bringing back 40 seconds in 5K. That's like not done. That's like in big races, guys are like coasting around, looking at each other in the drops, but it's a charging peloton, not like a group, not like it's not like Tour of Flanders and it's like a group of 15 chasing you. So basically at that point I was like, okay, I have to beat the Bengal guy slash, well, I have to beat him because if he gets four, he's 1 second behind me now based on the intermediate sprints. If he gets any time bonuses or finishes ahead of me, so like there's literally, I have to beat him. Because there's four of us and there's three second bonuses or three different bonuses. So the top, Alex Richardson went and then sat up and then big, top score guy went and I was like, go, go, go. And the Bengal guy actually went and I was like, I'm going to win the Sage Tour of Britain because Richardson's just shot his, probably his last shot. Top score guy's there. I feel good. Like I'm not on my hands and knees. This Bengal guy's a beast. He'll drag me up and I'll just hit them. And then I waited like maybe 150 meters and then the top score guy was just getting further away. I was like, okay, I have to go. If I want to win the stage, I could have just sat on, well, I could have just sat on the Bengal guy in theory. But then the time second countback might have worked in my favor like it did. So I went and then I just, he had a 75 meter lead with 500 to go and finished with a 10 meter lead at the line. So it's a bit like, it's weird how you just always want more. Like I've had a great day, really. Like I'm going to lead the Tour of Britain tomorrow. I got second on stage. Like if I would have come into the race and said, you're going to wear the leader jersey and get second on stage, I'd been like, shit, yeah. Like that's season made. That's Tour of Britain made for the team. But just the fact that it's like, oh, hindsight's 2020. I could have reacted immediately. But then I could have reacted immediately and he could have sat up that I was in the wheel. And then we could have got caught by the bunch and, it's like the snowball. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the nature of the beast, I guess. Sometimes these things are how they come about rather than what the actual end result is. Yeah. And like to that end, when you crossed the line, did you think that you'd done enough? Like, had you been doing the kind of like numbers in your head and stuff? Like, had you been trying to work it out? Did you cross the line thinking, I've gone into the lead?
When I passed him, I was like, I'm leading to Britain. Like 300 meters gone, like I'm leading to it right now. I got to catch him, win this stage. And then we cross the line, roll up to Claire, and then the bunch comes screaming in, but it's like, okay, I've had time to like slow down, say hi, put my foot on the ground. Like surely there was a gap. Like I didn't think they were that close. I thought it was going to be like, turn around and watch the clock sort of thing. Like you see in races when they're like, oh, counting the sun, seconds past. Yeah. I thought it was going to be like 20 seconds. Just because I remember, even though I watched the highlights just now with Rob and Jim, but it's like, I looked back at like 1.3 to go and there was like this sort of a longer straightaway before it curved left to like the 800 meters to go. I remember looking back and like they hadn't even hit the corner yet. Like they were out of sight still. So I was thinking, okay, they're like 30 seconds at least now. But of course, they got a lot closer than that.
Yeah. Obviously, I know the answers to this because I was there, but what was your reaction? Like, how did you feel when initially Corbin Strong was announced as the leader of the Tour Britain?
I was pretty devastated at first because I was pretty disappointed for a while I didn't win, but I was like, okay, well, I'm leading, I'm gonna go on the podium, some photos in the red jersey, pretty cool. And then we're in the bus, I'm like, oh, I don't have time to shower, I gotta go on the podium, like I'll pull in like clean socks out of the bag. And then they're like, oh no, Ben, like you're not leading. And I was like, oh, how was that possible? And then we found out, yeah, like an hour and a half later, that reread the rule book, checked the rules, and
yeah. I mean, how are you feeling now that you have been confirmed as the race leader?
Yeah, it's cool. It's pretty cool to be leading the Tour of Britain. Like, it's one of the biggest races and big teams here, and biggest race of the year for the team. Like, I don't think no one from our team has ever led Tour of Britain before, so it's great. It's really great, and we got couple hard days, five hard days ahead, but
five stages left. Is defending your GC lead a realistic prospect?
Gonna try. the fact the gaps are so small and that I'm not a bunch sprinter and there are some bunch sprinters up there, makes it look like there could be, will be somebody who will get those 7 seconds back in stage finishes. There's also, tomorrow's really grippy. The last stage is apparently pretty grippy. So, yeah, I mean, I came into this thinking, like, if I got a top 10, I'd be over the moon, and now I'm leading the race and got second on a stage. So if I can just hold on, and if I finish, my thought now is if I finish on the overall podium, that will be, everything went right. And, yeah,
I think we could all agree that would be a pretty good week out. Okay, well, thanks, Ben. All the best for the rest of the race. And yeah, that's it from us.
Thank you.
Brilliant stuff. And I think we can all agree stage 4 is going to be absolutely fascinating. Right, so far we've heard from two of the key people involved in the very front of the race. Now we get to hear the view of someone in the peloton and involved in the chase to claw the break back. Oscar Onley from Team DSM.
Stage 3 today, from Durham to Sunderland. Yeah, it was going to be a sprint day on paper, but we always knew there was a chance of the break staying away, and it ended up staying away. I think, yeah, we wanted a small break to go, and yeah, it was 4 riders. We thought it would be okay, but I knew at least three of the riders in that break, and yeah, they're all really strong riders, so I was a bit concerned. But yeah, it wasn't down to us to chase in the beginning, and so we left it up to Israel, and it was a really, really easy day for the first 120, 130K, basically. And then, yeah, then we decided that we needed to get a move on. And luckily, well, I think Ineos started it first, because they were riding more for GC, so we sent a man up there as well to help them more for if it came down to a sprint. And then I went up with about 15K to go, and did some turns in the front for a bit, but yeah, it wasn't enough, and the brakes stayed away, unfortunately. But it was a really wet day. It was we weren't expecting it to be that wet, to be honest. It was, the weather I saw this morning said 40% chance, but yeah, it was definitely more than 40% by the finish. It was a lot of standing water on the roads in the final 10K, riding up rivers at points and through massive puddles in the last 2K. It was a bit sketchy, but yeah, all good. No time lost, and looking forward to tomorrow. I think tomorrow is probably going to be the key GC day. Some punchy climbs up and down all day, and quite a short day as well, so could be a full-on racing from the start, I guess. And yeah, we have myself, Max and Chris still up there on the GC, and at the same time as the rest of the guys. So yeah, we've got some cards to play tomorrow, and we're looking forward to it.
If the dispatches we've heard so far have been mainly upbeat, don't worry, we're going to balance it out now with a dispatch from Colin Sturgis. We always really appreciate Colin's very insightful and very frank entries, and today's entry is no different. His team have not had the rub of the green in the Tour of Britain so far, and the bad luck continued on stage 3. Before you listen, I must forewarn you that there is at least one swear word in the dispatch, but I think Colin can be forgiven, given the tough time that his team has been going through. Over to you, Cole.
Hi, this is Colin Sturgis, Ribble World Tight Pro Cycling DS, and these are my Tour of Britain 2022 diaries. Stage 3. Where to start? Hell of a day out for all involved. It was some stage. First category 1 of Chapel Fell, which was absolutely vile, and that was just me in the team car, so God knows what the boys felt like out there, but pretty grim day. The rain came in as we kind of knew it might, but even running things through various apps and things like that, you're never really sure. But yeah, the last 90 minutes or more were just horrendous. Really, really bad. Loads of standing water. Poor visibility. Yeah, just pretty bloody bad. How did it go for us? Well, if we had, you'll have to excuse the poor Latin here, but if we had a DM Horribilis yesterday, we had another one today. Yeah, so 4 if not 5 punches, including Ross in the leading front group with about 10k to go. Double punctured, that was it, he was out. Yeah, another bike change for Ross early. Red, probably in the first 5Ks, puncher, big chase for the guy, which basically goosed him for later. And then the kicker was, I'm not entirely sure how far up, maybe 35k to go. Harry was doing it tough. Obviously, you know, yesterday in the break with him and Charlie, their legs were going to be a bit sore and, you know, they'd paid for it. So slid into a small group out the back with Red, an Israel rider and a couple of others. And they seemed to be tapping along quite nicely. I left them to move forward to go to Ross and to Zeb. And unbeknownst to me, not announced on Radio Tour and not relayed to me at all, Harry hit a moto. So apparently they were tapping along at a fair lick trying to get back on. And a moto had stopped basically in the racing line. The guys didn't see it. It was absolutely horrendous. Torrential rain, very poor, but you know, visibility, and you don't expect to see a motorbike in the middle of the bloody road. And yeah, the Israel rider managed to switch around it. Charlie managed to switch around it, but Harry didn't, hit the back of the bike, and yeah, basically had the rest of the day in the ambulance. So not great. He's in general, if you can call three. Pretty, and if you don't like swearing, just block your ears for about the next 5 seconds. Three pretty fucked up fingers, bone poking out and lots of flesh hanging off. It's okay, you can listen again now. The poor guy is out. So we're down to 4 riders, and Harry is at present high as a kite on morphine and messaging the WhatsApp group that we've got. With travel plans for tomorrow. So thanks, Harry. But yeah, like, I feel absolutely gutted for him. You know, it would have been fantastic for him and Charlie to be able to ride tomorrow's stage, have a crack for, you know, the most combative rider, or get in a break again. You know, it goes virtually, you know, through Great Ayton where they live. And yeah, just such a shame. So yeah, that was our day. I don't know what to say. I mean, you know, lady luck is, as Tom Peacock would say, playing with our balls. Yeah, the morale, we're trying to keep it as high as possible. Went around with chocolate and Haribo this evening and sort of try to keep things light. But, you know, when things just keep happening, and it's just such a kick in the teeth to lose Harry, lose Finn, you know, have all these mishaps happening. It's like, you know, what have we done to deserve this? Did we piss off some higher deity or something? I just don't know. So here we are, taking a 5-minute sort of break just to do some planning for tomorrow. My diet has gone completely out of the window today, so I have smashed a bag of lightly salted Hankook crisps and a glass of red wine. Take that. Yeah, and as I say, I'm just sat in my room quietly for 5-10 minutes, just trying to get my head around tomorrow. And then we'll we'll have some team meetings planned tomorrow, and then the guys will have an early night. I've had massage. Oh, I forgot. Oh, yes, it gets even better. So in the last 3Ks, Zeb was caught in and involved in a crash. So, yeah, poor bugger. He was the only rider left standing, as it was, and even he was scuppered. So, yeah, it's just not our tour. Such a shame. So tomorrow, starting red car, and I reckon it's probably going to be, I mean, they're calling it the Queen stage. They're not far off. It's pretty brutal. It's a very short stage in the scheme of things. It's only like 150Ks, but there's some serious climbing. There's three categorised climbs. There's Robin Hood's Bay, which is a category one. It's 4.5Ks at about 7%. You've got Egton Bank, which is category two. It's a mile at 1.6 kilometres and it's steep. It's one, I think it's about 9%. And then Carlton Bank, which is an absolutely horrible thing. 2 kilometres at 10%. Yeah, so add into that, a lot of uncategorised climbs, up and down, ducking and diving. Even one of the sprints is on the top of a berg. So it really is going to be a very, very grippy day. So I'm not sure what our plans are going to be. I'd like the guys to try for a break again. I think it's our only chance of, you know, doing something. As I said, everybody's put in, everybody's trained hard for this. It's just a kick in the teeth to, you know, sit here on the fourth day and not roll over, but just, you know, to say, wow, you know, what else can we do? We keep trying, and everything is just thrown in our face. So the only thing to do is keep trying. You know, I've seen some pretty bad crashes in my time. I've seen some adversity in my time, and the one thing is, you just, you know, something that marks out a champion is you get up, you pick yourself up, you maybe go to your room and have a good cry and a good swear, but you step up the next morning and you go again, and you try again and you keep trying, and eventually something sticks. So, you know, that's basically going to be my team talk this evening, is guys, you know, it doesn't matter. Really doesn't matter the amount of shit gets thrown at you. You know, you wipe it off and you stare it in the face and you go again. So that's what we're going to try to do. You know, none of the guys are quitters. I'm not a quitter. So just going to try our best. So I will report in again. Tomorrow we've got a very long transfer after the stage, so it could be a late night, so it may be a shorter recap, but I hope it's a recap with you know, a lot more of a fairy tale ending, but that remains to be seen. You know, there's been some great racing, I have to say. You know, not just you know, from the people in the jerseys and, you know, whatever, but it's really good. It's the Tour of Britain after all, and, you know, it's our biggest race. So the guys are enjoying it despite all the setbacks. We're enjoying it. It's fantastic. Even in absolutely horrible, horrible weather today, you know, there's thousands of people that, you know, bleh. Again, he says, thousands of people out on the hills, you know, in villages, in towns, just lining the streets. It's fantastic to see, you know, and they don't need to be there. You know, I'd rather be sat in the warm watching telly or having a glass of red or, you know, something. But no, they're out screaming and cheering, and the schools are out, the kids are out. It's absolutely fantastic to see. You know, it's there's a sense of pride in it as well, that, you know, these people come out to watch us, And I think a lot of people forget that. You know, we're pretty privileged. You know, we may be a Conti team and we may not be the best in the world. But people are coming out to watch us and give us a good cheer. You know, there was people up Chapel Fell today with, you know, go River Welltite signs, and people out in jerseys and things like that. And it's like, wow, you know, we've got a good little following. So to those people, thank you. It makes a difference. It really does. So I'm going to end it there. I'm out of chips, which is probably a good thing. I'm probably going to be fat as fuck, but, you know, you get that. And tonight's tunes, I've picked something a bit eclectic. It's James Lavelle again. Yeah, it's pretty chilled out, and I'm liking it. So it's it's One Mixed, Early Hours. Check it out. It's on Apple Music. Yeah, I'm liking it. Righto, I'm going to go. I'm rambling. But I hope you're enjoying these missives, these little diary entries. Let me know if you're not. And if you're easily offended by swearing, maybe don't tune in, eh? All right. Love yous all. Night.
If anyone sees Colin Sturr, just make sure to give him a big hug or a glass of red wine. That's all we have time for in today's episode. Thanks as ever to all of our guests for their brilliant entries, and we look forward to another great intray of dispatches tomorrow. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, then please do leave us a nice review. You can subscribe on all the usual channels, and you can follow us on social media. On Twitter, we are at British Conti, and on Instagram, we are at the British Continental. And please do visit our website for more interviews, journals, previews, and news at thebritishcontinental.co.uk.